It's the Shipping Container, rocking, rocking with you on a Tuesday, a Greg Cody Tuesday. How was that, Chris?
Excellent.
I'd give it an 8 out of 10.
This guy's got the hosting thing down, man. He's working his way on the range, and since we talked about it last week, he's back into, like, you know, messing around with his vocal ranges. We saw yesterday on the national show. I mean, Billy's coming up right now.
Bit of a setback, I'd say, yesterday on the national show, given what I was reading. Maybe not the time to whip out the you know, the voice work drills, but you know, I'm trying my hardest. So another thing that me and Anthony were just talking about off air is like microphone setup. So I've been using this, I think it's called like a Blue Snowball. Yeah. Blue Snowball Ice is what I've been using. Right. Cause I was told like, this is kind of like, you know, it's affordable. It'll get you in, but I don't like the way that I sound on a lot of the things that I do. Right. And I think the part of that is the echo. So I've been experimenting with like different microphones, and I got like these adapters and all these things. And I was telling him, and I told you guys, I don't think I've said this on air, but I was experimenting or flirting with the idea of getting like these sounds, like panels, like if I was like in a recording studio, like foam panels, and putting them up like on the wall in like this. I'm sitting at my dining room table, so they'd be up like where we eat and all this stuff. And
your wife's not having that.
She said, absolutely not. We're not doing that. And I'm like, well, it could just be like, you know, short term, temporary. We'll take it down. Like, there's not a ton of like paintings and stuff on the wall, so it'll be fine. I'm like, look, I'll get a color that looks nice and I'll do that. And she's like, no, absolutely not. But I've been looking again because this echo is driving me crazy. And I don't know what I'm going to do about the echo. But I'm trying to figure out how I can sound the best while also not going crazy and blowing like a ton of money. And then going back to work, and it's like, well, what do I do with all of this? Like, why do I have 17 microphones, a microphone stand, all these foam panels? Like, what am I doing with these things? Greg, are you in the same position as I am?
Isn't echo a terrible name for a microphone? I'm just saying. right? It seems like you don't want an echo in your microphone. I don't know. It's weird to me. But listen, here's what you do. And I did this in the early days of my podcast. Get into the closet, man. I'm in my closet with a carpet on the bottom. I'm surrounded on three sides by clothing. It muffles everything. It takes away that tinniness, that echo.
So I've been thinking about that too, right? But I don't have a walk-in closet here. What I have is just, you know, like a standard, the two doors, you open them up and it's just like the wall and the stuff hanging. So I don't know if I fit doing it in the closet. And a lot of these things that we do are video too, right? So like if I'm doing a video, like podcast type recording thing, do I want my jackets on my shoulders?
Wait, so we're just going to
say no.
Are we just going to let my dad slide on that mistake he made? Or is that what we're doing here? Like, dad, he wasn't talking about a microphone called an echo.
What was he doing?
He was talking about trying to improve the echo in his...
Oh, I thought the name of his microphone was an echo.
That's Greg Snowball. Cody. That's Greg Cody, everyone. Welcome to the Greg Cody Tuesday.
You better admit it would be a bad name for a microphone.
It would. That is a good
point. It truly would, yeah.
That's a good point. Roy is in the studio. He's looking like a hero. I think of anyone in that studio right now as a hero. Roy, I imagine, just like Billy yesterday, you galloped in on a horse. How are you doing in there today?
I'm not very much. I'm just happy to have a job.
Right.
I'm happy right now that I'm here.
What's it like being in there after like 4 months not being in there?
Well, it smells clean. And that's based off the constant sanitizing of the studio. But yeah, it looks about as dirty because of all this stuff that we have piled up here, like hats and whatnot, all the packing.
Yeah. Roy, I was going to suggest that if I'm going to be honest with you, I was there 3 times for the show, and I knew that I wasn't sure when I'd go back, so I decided to have my own hat draft. So I took a couple hats.
Oh, wow.
Want to get in on the hats before the hats are gone.
A haft.
There you go. By the way, another piece of technology. I know that we moved on, but another piece of technology. I don't know if you guys noticed. I went scrambling, and I think I was cutting in and out. So I also got like a hardwire to connect to my internet, and I had to get an adapter. I have, in the words of Ariel, gadgets and gizmos aplenty, and I've been getting them throughout this this thing just to try to sound good. And then when I forget to plug one thing in, like I'm sure the audio wasn't good because you guys kept freezing on me, and I'm like, what's going on? Oh, I forgot to plug that thing in. I don't know what I'm going to do with all this stuff afterwards, to be honest with you.
Well, let's put it this way. It doesn't look like the pandemic's ending anytime soon. So it looks like you're good to have those gadgets and gizmos aplenty. Maybe store them away in a nice Tupperware somewhere and bring them out when needed again in probably like 6 months.
Yeah. I mean, it's good stuff to have because I could, you know, whenever I want, just, hey, guys, let's talk. Let's have a little podcast. Let's join the Greg Cody show. Ooh, there I should go. Probably... Greg, I'm going to apologize to you because Chris asked me like a couple weeks ago, like if I wanted to join the Greg Cody show to talk about the Marlins, and I didn't do it because I was recording something else. So I'd like to publicly apologize to you for that.
Well, that's quite all right, Billy. We love you anyway.
What'd you
have? Always a future show.
What'd you have on the Greg Cody show this week?
We had on somebody you've never heard of to talk about fixing Tim Kirchen's laptop and having COVID-19, actually. It's a behind-the-scenes IT guy for ESPN. Also, we had a new episode of Mount Gregmore Name Game. Wow. And Christopher put together a montage of my greatest throat clears, like that. So it's a big seller.
So that's what you guys had the best IT guy in all of Bristol, Tim. You guys had him on the show?
Yep.
He is the number one IT guy on the planet.
Wow.
He's the best. Yeah.
He is the absolute best. You should check it out. It's an interesting story. I mean, he tells us about Adam Schefter running crazy before. Like, he tells us some fun stories of people frantically needing him right before live shows. And we get into, you know, having COVID and what that's like. So it's you've never heard it.
Wait, he had it?
Yeah, he had it bad. I mean, he didn't have it bad. He didn't end up in the hospital. But, like, there's a spectrum here. For not going to the hospital, he was.
And how is he?
He's good. He's better now. He's still like, has a little, some slight breathing issues. But overall, he's made a full recovery.
That was a much better sell than we had some guy on you've never heard of.
Yeah.
That's how he pitches it in. That's how he sets it up in the podcast, too. He's like, we're talking.
I was going to say, because we've all heard of him.
I know, but the audience here, though, uniquely
has heard of him.
But the audience hasn't.
Yes, correct.
I mean, but when you get the best IT guy in the world, you got to say, hey, I got the best IT guy in the world on, you know?
I didn't know he was, or else I would have advertised him as such.
Ooh, Greg, should we add him to Greg's list for the IT position?
Ooh, yeah.
Do you remember Greg's list?
Yeah, he talked about this.
Okay, Greg, a couple weeks ago, we talked about starting something called Greg's List, where we would just start a list of people that did the common things like a mechanic and an AC repair guy.
Go-to people.
Yeah, and we said that we'd name it, you know, Greg's List, like the yellow pages, but it'd be specific. It's called Greg's List. We named it after you, and then you would endorse people to do things.
Greg, you were updates. Here for this. Greg, you
yeah,
were here
you, we this. Yeah, we did this with you.
Well, I endorsed Tim Cronin for all things technological.
Do you guys before you get on to where you were just going, do you guys have people in your lives that before they have their cup of coffee, you just can't talk to them because they don't remember anything? They are just like my dad, he is such a creature because he's addicted. He drinks like 9 cups of coffee a day. So before he has his first cup, it's like talking to somebody who has no brain power.
Yeah, and the worst part of that is I'm married to a woman who's one of these people. I don't know if you guys can relate. My wife, from the second I wake up in the morning, she's peppering me because she gets up like an hour before me, so she's got all this built-up stuff to say. So she's peppering me. I'm literally half asleep.
He's still asleep right now. He's still asleep. Go ahead.
I'm barely awake now, and she's talking to me, asking me questions, and I'm just like, oh, God. It's unbelievable.
So are you a night owl?
I usually stay up till I would say 11:30, sometimes 12. I think last night I was up a little bit later. Imagine that, listening to my own podcast. that took a while. You know, it's 40 minutes long. Yeah. I learn. I educate myself. You know.
But so your podcast comes out on Monday. So you're listening to your podcast after it was already out?
I listened to it once. Christopher sends me the edited final product. I listen to it just to go over it. And then I listen to it when it comes out. So I generally listen to the entire thing 2 or 3 times a week.
I'm a crazy person too, and I'll listen to things over and over again, and like I'll edit things, and then I'll make like a short like, hey, let me take out this like one, you know, stutter here. And then I'm like, well, I got to listen to the whole thing again just to make sure. Even though I'm right where I took out the thing, I'll like listen to it all over again. So like when we put out like the challenge ones, for example, those are usually like between 45 and like 55 minutes, depending on like how long, if we have a guest, how long they go, whatever. Right. So like sometimes it's my Sunday, and Anthony can tell you because he like puts them into the system. He'll get them for me at like 10 o'clock at night or 11 o'clock at night, which I feel bad about because I know that he usually like inputs it and whatever, right? So that's when we've just finished our final listen through where my wife listens also. And I'm like, what do you think about this? Like, should I change something? Should I not? And that's usually like the fifth or sixth time that like we've gone through it. So like, I'm like you, Greg, but once Anthony's published it, I know there's nothing that I can do to change it. So I don't listen to it again. Like after it's out into the universe, it's gone forever. And I don't listen to it after it's gone out because I can't change anything at that point. So if anything, listening to it and hearing like little like imperfection that I'm like, man, I could have changed that will like eat at me. And I'll be like, oh, I should have fixed that. I could have fixed that. I could have made it, you know, 5 seconds tighter if I would have taken that out.
You are speaking to my soul right now. Any like local hour mystery crate thing that I'm working on, I do the exact same thing. And sometimes I send it to Tony, so it's out of my hands and gone. And for some reason, I'm listening to it again, and I find myself raising levels and stuff. And I'm like, no, I've already sent it. Why am I even doing this? I'm just torturing myself.
But you're the master of the final. So like we have in our files at work, Chris will save something and he'll save like, you know, let's just say like SUI Awards best song final, right? And then you're like, okay, so it says final. That's the last one, right? And then he's heard something or one of us has heard something or Mike said, hey, why don't we change this or tweak this or whatever? And then in the folder, it'll say SUI's Mixdown best song final. And then you're like, wait, hold on a second. So this says final and then the other. And then heaven forbid he goes through again. I think we've gone to final. And it's like, I have no idea. And the other ones don't get removed. The final and the final don't get removed. So if you're looking for something like a year from now for whatever reason, and you're like, well, who won the SUI last? And it's like, okay, let me find it. And then you like quickly grab it and you go to play. And it's like, okay, I'm going to play it. It says final, like ready to go. And then it's like, no, wait. There's a final. We got to do that one. That's the most recent one. So I totally believe that after you send something and you're done with it, you go through and you're like, let me tweak this. Let me change something.
It's funny because it's true. Go ahead.
No, just because we were talking about Greg's. Greg, I saw you take a couple swigs of coffee. You remember Greg's List now or no?
Greg's List. Yeah, of course.
Okay, so I just wanted to give you an update on Greg's List, which you definitely remember. So Aaron, who we've talked to a couple times, like in, you know, when we did like Dinner for Schmucks, and he's done some of the Lauer After Hours and all that stuff.
He likes gas station sushi.
Okay.
Oh, well, yeah.
He also used to work at a body shop and a fencing company, and he works as an investor. So I told him that he could be our body shop guy, our fencing guy, and he could be our investment advisor. So we have now one person taking care of three things on Greg's List.
I feel like he's the only guy in America who does those three particular jobs. It seems like the first two go together. And then when you hear he's also an investor, you wonder, and I'm not, you know, I don't mean to, but the thought occurs, how good an investor can he be if he needs these other two jobs?
No, he's being honest. He used to do those other things. It's probably like a come up, you know, like I'm sure that you had a job, Greg, in college or, you know, at the end of high school before you became a world-renowned writer at the Miami Herald. What did you do? You must have had another job outside of journalism, right?
Well, I was a paper boy growing up. Like
still in the
kids.
Field, though.
So you kept it in the industry.
Mm. I kept it. Yeah. Little did I know, I delivered the Hollywood Sun-Tattler, a long defunct newspaper in Hollywood, Florida.
But outside of that, you didn't have any other jobs, right? Didn't you? Wasn't your first job outside of that, like working for the Herald?
Yeah. For all intent and purposes, yes. I did technically. I worked for like 2 days at a gray drugstore. That's also a chain of drugstores that I don't think exists anymore. And then I think I worked for about a week at a place called Crown Chemicals. But I was at that time, you know, I was scrawny, man. When I graduated from high school, I weighed like 130 pounds. And the job at Crown Chemicals involved, you know, moving these big, giant 400-pound drums of chlorine and everything, and I wasn't up to it physically, and the guy who hired me is like, you know what, this ain't gonna work, kid.
So you've had a couple of rough jobs, because people will think like, oh, paperboy, that's a glamorous gig, you just go around, toss the paper, it lands on people's front lawns. That's not the case. I have experience one day as a I would say like a paperboy assistant, right? And I wasn't a paperboy, my cousin was a paperboy. and he would, they'd have to go, and they'd have to go to the warehouse or whatever it is. They'd have to go, then they'd wrap the things. And he had like this, it was like a Mazda. I don't even remember what kind of car. It's like a Mazda or something, right? And no lie, it had a sunroof, and him and his brother would go every day at like 2 or 3 in the morning, whatever time it was, go pick up all the newspapers, and they'd have to roll all the papers, put all the papers inside the, you know, little plastic baggy things, right? And then they have like the route that they were going to do it. And they did it for some time, right? So I was curious, what is this like? So it was like a, I want to say it was like a Friday, it was like a Thursday night, Friday morning. I had been at the Grove, and you know, the Grove closed at like 2, 3 in the morning, whatever it was, right? So I'm headed home, and I'm like, hey, I know that they're doing this now. I want to tag along and see what this is all about, right? So I went with them. They had already done like the hard work of picking up all the papers, putting it in the bags. And I was just along for the ride, where he has a like a mountain of newspapers between his backseat and his front seat, and his brother sitting on the stack of the newspapers out the sunroof, and they're just tossing them onto the things, going left, right, this house, that house. This house gets an English and a Spanish. This house gets, you know, like the Sunday special. This house gets this. This house gets that. It's not an easy gig. Being a paperboy is not the glamorous life that you think it is, where it's like a little kid on a bike that he's just, you know, has 5 newspapers. He's like, oh, hey, you know, Mrs. you know, Cleaver or whatever, and he tosses the newspaper and that's it.
Well, I never considered it glamorous, but I was the little kid on the bike. I literally, it's like a stereotype, I literally had the basket on the front of my bike piled up with a pyramid of papers. It was a small-time paper route. I probably did like 40 houses on a 2 or 3 street area. So I was 13 at the time. So, you know, it's not like I'm going to be driving a bike for 4 miles or anything. So it was a real small-time thing. But somebody actually dropped off the papers at my house. You know, it's not like I had to go get
pre-rolled.
That seems an inefficient way to do that.
Well, yeah, I guess it was, but
I wonder, well, no, I wonder if maybe, you know, this person had like a side hustle where this person is the one who's actually responsible for like the paper route and, you know, whatever. They just go and they start rolling the papers, and then they're like, oh, we'll just give this kid like $3 a day and he'll go do all the hard work of delivering it. And if there's an issue, then not on me.
You know, I never even considered that, but there probably was a scam that I was inadvertently involved in.
Oh, there you go.
Later, I feel used. Wow. Yeah.
This person had a job of being a paper delivery person. They just wrapped them, and then they just was like, oh, you know, cheap labor. We'll give it to some 13-year-old kid. We'll give him $5 for the week, and then it's done.
Yeah, but back then, they weren't even wrapped in that cellophane or whatever the hell, that rubber. What are they, plastic? What are they wrapped in?
But, I don't know.
It was just a rubber band. They were just wrapped in a rubber band. And so if I threw it into a puddle, then there was hell to pay.
Mm. Yeah.
How about that?
How about Roy? That?
What?
Did you ever have any interesting jobs? I know that you're a longshoreman.
Oh, that was it.
Hmm. Do you remember any of your longshoreman techniques? Because I used to work in retail, so I could be like our special retail person if that's something that we would need on Craigslist, but I don't think that that's something that we would need.
Didn't really have a technique.
Hmm.
I mean, I'm the baseball umpire expert. We all have our areas of expertise, Roy.
I'm sure you do. I'm sure you know, and you do know how to call a strike.
Thank you.
Hey, Roy, when you're a longshoreman, does that job involve one of those big giant ropes with like a 1 foot diameter rope?
Yes, to the boat.
What?
Yeah. You tie the boat. You tie the ships to the dock. Using the big rope, yes.
The kind of rope you need to lift with 2 hands. I know what you're saying, Greg. You said it really awkwardly, but I do
what
know.
What is that?
You said, does it have one of those big ropes with like a 1 foot diameter rope?
Before coffee, like this guy is so weird. It's so funny.
Hey, commercials are back. Let's make this transition less awkward. Back after this.
All right, so I was on the internet last night. This is how I know sports are back. It's because I found myself going down a random baseball reference rabbit hole last night. Because like I read Jordan McPherson's article about the Miami Marlins in the Miami Herald, and it's just so exciting to me in this baseball season that every team, because if this article is being written about the Marlins, every team is writing it about how they're constructing their roster to legitimately make the playoffs.
And I know most teams every year are like, we have a chance, but they don't really think they do. In this season, every baseball team legitimately thinks they have a chance. So that just got me fired up, knowing that the Marlins are trying to build a playoff roster. So I just got down a rabbit hole. For some reason, I ended up in the 2006 Rookie of the Year voting. Okay, Billy. 2006, I think, goes down as the best season in Marlins history outside of the two World Series championships. Mm. It was the what's it called? It was the
The Ugla.
I know. I'm having the coach, Joe Girardi. He won Manager of the Year that year. It was a big year. So basically, how many people? There are 12 people on this list of top 10 Rookie of the Year voting.
Wait, what was their record? Weren't they like 71-91 or something?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Was that their last winning record?
I think
that was a losing record. But
I thought they had a winning record.
I think that it was just it was a surprising team. Let me look up their record. So what was the question?
No, the point is okay, so you have right here the NL Rookie of the Year voting. It's the top 10, but because of ties, there are 12 players on the list. All right. I want you to guess how many Marlins in 2006 were in the top 12 players of NL Rookie of the Year voting.
Oh, wow. So that was a year with a bunch of rookies. By the way, they were 78 and 84, I think.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So they were a little it was a surprising team. I will give you that. It was an exciting team. Okay, so let's go around and try to figure this out. All right. We had Mike Jacobs at first base. We had Dan Uggla at second base. At shortstop, we had Hanley. Hanley won Rookie of the Year, right?
Correct.
Okay. Then we had Cantu. Uggla got Rookie of the Year votes for sure.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Then in the outfield, I think we had Josh Willingham.
Yep.
Right? Was he a rookie?
You said his name. He got some votes. He was the bottom guy. He's 12th in Rookie of the Year voting, but he's on this list. So far you've named three Marlins, and okay, there's still more to go.
All right.
Jeremy Hermita?
No, I think he was a rookie earlier than that. I think that was past his time. I believe. I could be wrong about that.
Was he on that team?
I don't know. I think
Hermita he was on that team.
Yeah.
Was that the Bonifacio flash in the pan year at center field on opening day or no? No, I don't think it was.
It may have been, but he's not on this list.
All right. We had Cabrera on that team.
Yeah, but right? He wasn't a rookie.
No, I'm just trying to go over where everybody would be.
Yeah. All right. The rest are pitchers. I'll tell you that. You've named the rest are pitchers.
So that was a Scott Olsen year.
Mm-hmm.
And we probably had... Was that a Josh Johnson year also?
You just hit two. Josh. So Hanley was first in voting. Dan Uggla was third in voting. Josh Johnson was fourth in voting. That's pretty sick.
Who and was second in
Ryan Zimmerman?
So I remember thinking at the time that the Marlins were going to miss out on Rookie of the Year because I thought that Hanley and Uggla were going to cancel each other out in terms of voting.
Yeah. There are some great names on this list, honestly. But as far as the closing out the Marlins, it's so you only have one left. You have a name. Scott Olsen was tied at the bottom with Josh Willingham, and there's one other pitcher, starter, who was tied with them.
Starting pitchers that year, man.
He's still pitching, I believe.
Dontrell was on that team, but he wasn't a rookie.
Mm-hmm. Roy, any guesses?
Oh, I know. I cheated. I looked up the roster, but I don't know which one of the two, but I know who it is.
Go ahead.
It's Anibal Sanchez, right? Ricky Nolasco also, but I don't know if Ricky was a rookie that year.
All right, it is one of those two. Let's go around. I want you guys guesses. Who was in the Rookie of the Year voting that year? Anibal Sanchez or Ricky Nolasco? Greg, first to you.
Sanchez.
Roy.
Sanchez.
Tony.
Nolasco.
You just had to yang. You had to yang when they yang. I got it.
No, Zeke when they zag. It doesn't matter. I'm going to suggest, I think, and I don't know, that it's Anibal Sanchez just because he had a no-hitter. So I feel like that got him some brownie points in the voting.
Anibal Sanchez. Tony, it's okay. You were just trying to even out the game. I get it. Yes, but that's just crazy, though. Is that not, I know that was a very long way of saying, that's pretty impressive that the Marlins had six of the top 12 Rookie of the Year voted people in 2006 like that, and Joe Girardi won Manager of the Year. I mean, that's a great year for the Marlins.
Reggie Abercrombie, remember him?
Oh, see, we just had that what name too.
Miguel Oliva. Ooh, yeah. Cody Ross, remember Cody? Everybody remembers Cody Ross. Ooh, that was the start of the Amezaga days, right? Oh,
such a good
Joe
time.
Borchard. Wow, Marlins, Marlins. Eric Reed, Chris Aguila, Matt Traynor. Ooh, that was that Matt Traynor's first or second stint? Did he have two stints with the Marlins?
Billy, if,
oh,
you had
Paul
to,
Hoover.
If you had to pick a four-year span of the Marlins, Billy, what would you say is your heyday of being a Marlins fan? Obviously, you've been a fan of all of them, but like, if you had to just bunch up a four-year period, because for me, I think it's 03 through like 07. So like, this team was like right in my heyday. Like every name you just said, like I knew all of their stats the entire season.
I mean, in terms of success, like which is like the best like four-year window, I don't know if that's what you're asking, but that would probably be like 2002 to 2005, right?
Yes.
So 2002, 2003, 2004, 2005, because yeah. That's before they blew up the blueprint, I guess, again, and then restarted in 2006. But 2006 was a very like exciting season,
yes,
because there was no expectations, and they were decent and close for a while until, you know, their inexperience caught up to them.
And
that was fun.
And the storylines with Joe Girardi, like almost getting fired in the middle of a game. And then,
well, he did. Samson said that they did fire him. And then
the players rebelled, because the players kind of rebelled, I believe, is the story. Look at that.
Who do you think was leading that rebellion? Do you think it was Reniel Pinto or Joe Borowski? Logan Kensing, maybe?
Who was the catcher?
Catcher was Miguel Olivo.
I feel like catchers, like, you know, Joe Girardi was a catcher. Mm-hmm. They have a good relationship with managers. I feel like Miguel Olivo. That's another one. I loved how he would just swing at every first pitch fastball. If you threw that guy a first pitch fastball, he was swinging. Marlins talk here on the Lauer.
Hermita was on that team.
Really?
Not a rookie, though.
He was like the vet, the grizzled vet. Greg, were you?
So was Wes Helms.
I could just do a whole local hour of Billy just saying names from this roster. But Greg, you seemed like you got your feelings hurt when I plugged another Miami Herald writer's article. I saw your face.
Not at all. I like Jordan McPherson. He does a great job covering the Marlins. It's not it's a thankless job in a way, but he does a good job.
I mean, is this not like crazy? Are you guys not a little excited for this? I mean, let's just put a caveat that the baseball season might not even happen because the world is crumbling around us. But
pretty
like, just
caveat.
under the assumption of the plan that they're headed towards, I am like very excited about this baseball season. I legitimately am. And it's not just because the Marlins. I just think it's going to be interesting to like follow it the whole time. Like, I don't know. I'm just really into this baseball season legitimately. Is anybody else with me?
Well, yeah, it'll be fun. I mean, let's see how it goes. No one's going to be – we talked about this. No one's going to be mathematically eliminated before September, which is the first time I think that's ever happened. So everyone's going to be in it. Now, the interesting thing about it is that because it's such a short season, I think it's 66 games, right, or 60 games. So you're going to have like the good teams, if they get off to a slow start, may miss the playoffs. And then you'll have a potential for like surprising teams that get off to a hot start or that at the end go on a tear that make the playoffs that you wouldn't see doing it. So once you get into the playoffs, though, you would think, and maybe not, but you'd think that kind of things would sort themselves out and the teams that should be there will take care of business and the others won't. But who knows, right? Because a lot of teams are built around veterans, and sometimes it'll take veterans a little bit longer to get going, or, you know, sometimes it could work to the veterans' advantage where they won't get tired. It's going to be interesting. I mean, obviously it's like a season we haven't seen before.
Did you see Craig Mish and David Sampson arguing on Twitter last night, Billy?
I did not. What were they arguing about? Craig Mish was high on Lewin Diaz and him going to be there. And buzz about Monte Harrison.
Oh, dude, that's the one. That's the guy that no one's ever heard of that I'm so excited about. But no, Mish was just basically saying that the Marlins, this roster that they're going to be putting this year is a different strategy from last year, because last year they were kind of saving guys. And at this year, they seem like if you have talent and you're ready for the big leagues, they're putting you up there this year. And Mish was just like, this is a different mentality that they're taking. And then Sampson came in with the cynical, like, or they're just trying to make their trades seem like they were worth it and cover their own bleep. Like, you know, it was just a funny back and forth of Sampson just kind of dismissing everything Jeter's
I don't understand that, though, because I thought that Sampson tweeted a couple weeks ago that the Marlins would do something like this, and now they're doing it and he doesn't, it doesn't matter.
Sampson does this thing where he doesn't want to say that he's being critical or doesn't like the Marlins or the Jeter regime, so he'll like give them little compliments like, I'm a fan, I live in South Florida, I root for the Marlins, but then everything he says about Jeter and what they're doing specifically kind of like undercuts that. So it's like a funny dynamic that he has with the Marlins, because he doesn't want to appear bitter, but everything he actually says and really feels kind of gives off bitter.
You guys sad that Matt Kemp's not going to make this team? They didn't bring him back to their summer camp. I saw Matt Kemp. I went to a spring training game which I'm glad I did because it doesn't seem like I'm going to see baseball this year. So I'm glad that I made it to a spring training game. But it was also like a week before they shut everything down. So I wonder if I should have actually been there or not. And I saw Matt Kemp, the Marlin. Oh, what a rush. I was feet away from Matt Kemp. I think I have a picture of Matt Kemp as a Marlin. I don't know what I'm going to do with it.
That's how you know the Marlins are going to be good this year, because Matt Kemp couldn't even make this team.
You know what I'm wondering? And we should have looked this up before we just started talking about sports and the Marlins and baseball. Greg, maybe you know. How would this year count in terms of like service time? So if they have like a prospect or like someone that – I don't think that they'll have someone that they just drafted in the draft play. But what would you do in terms of service time? Like, does this count against the player in terms of like arbitration?
I would think everything's prorated, no? I mean, I don't know specifically, to be honest, but I would guess it's prorated. It would seem to be fair if it were prorated. But you are right. I'm generally pessimistic about this whole sports restart because I don't think it's going to get off the ground fully. But at the same time, baseball season, should it happen, is going to be really interesting, because all of a sudden, if you have a modest winning or losing streak, let's say your team wins or loses four or five games in a row, suddenly that's a big thing. That's a big deal. So that's going to be something different. It's going to make put a lot of suspense to the proceedings. But will it
happen? A six-game win streak is essentially a 16-game win streak.
Yeah, it's huge.
Wow, look at that math. Back after this. And we're back. Greg Cody, are you like more awake yet? At the beginning of this local hour, I was a little worried about you. Are you feeling more awake right now?
I'm wide awake in America.
What are you having for breakfast today outside of 7 cups of coffee?
I might make, I don't generally eat breakfast, but sometimes I have breakfast for lunch. I might make myself an omelet today. I'm really into omelets lately. Chicken's been very good to me. The eggs are happening. And I love a 3-egg omelet with 3 or 4 different types of ingredients. It's fantastic.
Roy, what are you laughing at?
Chicken has been very good to me.
They're delivering those eggs to me, baby.
Yeah, they do.
Greg, you seem like someone who like later on in life might have like a chicken coop and try to grow your own eggs, or you know, befriend a chicken.
The problem is chicken. The problem is eggs are pretty readily available. You know what I mean? I don't see myself having to start growing chickens. All that stuff. Somebody bought me a bread maker once, and it seemed like a good idea at the time. It seemed like a great gift. But then, you know, you can pretty much buy any kind of bread you want. And the whole act of making a loaf of bread can be pretty involved if you do it from scratch. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's like churning your own ice cream, you know, growing your own chickens. It's just one of those steps that I'm looking for a shortcut.
Just give
me a dozen eggs.
There are certain things that while you would get, I guess, the feeling of satisfaction and accomplishment in doing, it doesn't seem like it's worth it. Like bread, for example, unless you're going to be churning out a bunch of loaves of bread on the regular, it seems like it'd be an expensive thing where you could buy a loaf of bread for like $2 or whatever a loaf of bread costs now, depending, I guess, on the type of bread you get. We're making your own bread. You'd have to buy the yeast and you'd have to buy, I don't even know how to make bread, but I know the yeast is involved. What else do you don't put eggs in bread, right? Now I sound dumb.
Flour.
Flour.
Baking soda.
Baking soda.
Just probably a little pinch of baking soda to make sure, you know, everything's happening. Probably got to get the glutens going. There's a lot of stuff to bread you don't know, Billy.
What? I don't know anything about bread. In fact, I'd say there's everything about bread that I don't know. All I know is how to eat it and buy it. It seems like it's a lot easier than getting it. Also, I feel like you'd have to have the perfect mixture, like the perfect recipe, and do it every time. If not, it'll taste slightly different. So I don't know how to perfect a bread. You know one thing, Anthony, and I feel like you may wonder along with me, you know what I've always wondered how they make? I've always wondered how they make pastelitos. I don't know what kind of glaze that is over the guava or whatever you have. I don't know how they make pastelitos. I don't even know what to call it because it's not a bread. It's like basically like it's like a
thin dough.
It's like a little crisp kind of, and it's like glazed. I don't know what it is. I don't know how people make it, but that's one thing I'd want to make. Also, one thing probably easier just to buy.
It probably is easier to buy it than to make it, for 100% sure. It almost reminds me of, you know, baklava is the Greek dessert that's very like doughy. Everybody, a lot of blank faces here. Anybody baklava?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they put it in like very thin sheets, almost like making a biscuit, right? Like you make very thin layers until you finally build it up. So I think that's what a patalito is. It's almost like a lot of pieces of this very fine like dough in ridges until they put whatever's in the middle and then the stuff on top. But Billy, have you ever seen this? When you get the patalito and it's either stuck to the paper that they give it to you in, or you put it on a napkin by mistake and then all of the glaze rips off in one piece. Mm-hmm. I'm super interested in why that happens. Why does it always rip off?
Well, it's sticky.
Well, I know, but
that's one of those things that I eat always with a napkin. But like you're saying, you kind of have to grab it on the sides, because if you grab it with a napkin on the top, you know you're going to
lose the glaze. Mm-hmm. And you can't lose the glaze. Like, you need the glaze as part of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think you guys are describing phyllo dough.
Yes, phyllo, yes.
Phyllo dough.
Yes.
Mm. It's like a pastry dough, like a pastry shell dough.
Yes, that's Greg, exactly what it is.
Greg, you also have something like, didn't you get one year for Christmas the ability to make your own beer at home?
I did. Yes.
I feel like every year you get something for Christmas that's just, hey, let's make this at home, and then you never end up using any of
it. Is it from you?
No.
I did get a beer kit. I think it might have been your mother bought me that, and I made it. You know, but again, making beer is very involved, because you have to like ferment it in a dark room. All of a sudden you're covering a jug of undrinkable beer that's going to be beer someday. And you know, you're putting it in a dark room and covering it with a black cloth and leaving it there for 3 weeks. It's a big effort to make beer.
That's the thing about the beer making process, is that that's always a step. It's all right, let's sit for 21 days. And it's like 21 days. I don't know what I'm going to be doing 21 days from now. What if I'm busy?
Exactly. And then you mark it on the calendar and, you know, all of a sudden it becomes like a month and a half ordeal just to make. You know, you could go to a store and buy a case of beer and you're all there, you know, but it's the thought that counts. So it's sort of fun to actually do the process and have a little better understanding for what it takes to do that. You know, I'd love to make my own wine someday. I've been investigating whether it's possible to grow grapes in South Florida, because I know there are
it's impossible,
really bad. Right? Well, there are bad wineries like in the middle of the state. Like, I think there's one in Lakeland. But
I'm just picturing Greg stomping grapes.
There's bad wineries. Think of the one in Lakeland. That's there's an endorsement.
I dream of my name on a label, a wine label
of bad wine that you were able to grow in the Florida climate.
Right.
So, Greg, funny enough, when we talked about dream jobs and we talked about like alternate ways that our lives could have gone, one of the things that I said was owning a vineyard in, you know, somewhere in Napa, maybe Sonoma County, somewhere like that. So maybe you and I, Greg, when it's all said and done and we ride, you know, into the sunset, me and you start up a winery, maybe somewhere a little bit north of Napa where the grapes are really, really good.
I love the idea. And I will tell you that a couple of trips my wife and I have taken to the Napa Valley is the most idyllic getaway. It's the best way to spend 3 or 4 days, just doing the wineries, driving around to certain vineyards, you know, wine that you've been loving for years. You finally actually go to the vineyard, take a little tour and everything, have lunch outside. It's just it's really fabulous.
Maybe let somebody else do the driving when you're at vineyards all day.
That's a factor.
But Greg, I can vouch, because I've done it.
So bougie.
The wine that you drink is almost so good that it doesn't get you the same level of intoxicated that other wines would. Did you see that when you were there?
I know what you're talking about, but I like a strong wine. I mean, my favorite wine is a Cabernet Sauvignon, which is a little bit heavy. You know,
very bold.
That and the ribeye is like the greatest marriage on earth.
It ain't heavy. It's my wine.
What, Cabernet?
Just a Greg Cody saying, it ain't heavy, it's my wine. Sorry.
Oh, right.
Right.
Well, that's true in this case. My wife's a Pinot Noir fan.
I love a good Pinot.
Yeah, I like a good crisp Pinot Grigio with like cheese or something like that.
Well, look wine at you talk. Two just bougieing it up with each other.
I'm telling you, Greg and I, maybe a wine talk podcast in the future, but for sure, once it's all said and done, a nice vineyard, we got to go start scoping out what the landscape looks like, what kind of grapes we want to grow.
But in the meantime, I am investigating having a mini, the world's smallest vineyard right in my own backyard. That I dream of that. That's going to happen.
Greg, send people into their Tuesday by singing something falsetto.
Oh, I can't do that. We've gone over that. I can't hit the high notes
anymore. We'll try.
Hey, there's a party going on right here.
Not high enough.
Pulling a gang.
I can't climb that ladder. I mean, my voice. Listen to my voice. You think I'm going to hit a high note? Come on.
Have a good one, everyone.
Bye.